CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It is what's today? It's Tuesday. It's my sister's birthday. Yeah, I better be paying attention.
I hope you're not only remembering now.
No. Well, I've got a present for her and everything. I didn't know what day it was. But I'm prepared, Sia. Don't worry, I'm not going to embarrass anybody. It's okay. It's my sister's birthday.
Be embarrassed. What's just re-gift something.
Yeah. Sia, just Sia re-gift, so don't worry anybody. Anybody who's concerned. Yeah.
What's her favorite color?
Yeah. Sia's got a whole drawer of stuff. If I ever needed a present for anybody, I'll just phone Sia and he'll give me something that he doesn't like anymore. Ah, good morning. So Pumelele's here, and Siyabonga Sangweni's here, and Bulelo Tinta's here, and you and me. That's all we need.
It's a full house.
That's a full house.
You call me like my mother when I'm in trouble.
What, Siyabonga Sangweni?
Yeah. Ooh.
It's good. I like the way it kind of flows there. Siyabonga Sangweni.
Well, you could have just been thanking his family as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
well, that's pretty confusing. That's what was so clever about them calling him Siyabonga, is that actually they were thanking themselves. The parents are like, every time we hear this, we're going to feel good.
You see where my issues with having ego issues and vanity issues come from.
Right.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, listen, we've got so much to do this morning. We're introducing something new I'm very excited about at 20 to 7. Now, anybody who used to listen to John Robbie when he was on 702, he used to have the brilliant JJ Cornish, who's been on the Burning Platform a couple of times. But the thing about JJ Cornish is he is the expert when it comes to covering Africa, in particular. The more arcane and obscure knowledge around Africa that many of us don't actually have a very good grip on. So JJ Cornish spends most of his time being a correspondent for Agence France-Presse. He works for a number of other publications, including the BBC. He has done work locally for Cape Talk and for 702. And he really is the foremost guy in the country when it comes to learning about, explaining to, and generally keeping us abreast of all the most important developments on our continent, something which I think we've been remiss in doing for a very long time. So exciting stuff that starts
also,
today.
Also, you forgot to say, also, in an extremely clever, witty, and engaging way. It's not like boring.
But Pumi, that goes without saying. I mean, why the hell do you think we have you here? You know, it's the same reasons. Interesting and witty, and if it was just boring, we wouldn't want you, you know?
Oh, but JJ.
JJ's great. So we got him coming in. We've got a little talk this morning. I've got to get into this because it's such a big deal for some people. I want to talk about 5G because there's so many misnomers and so many things we get wrong and things that people are spreading around, like conspiracy theories about 5G. So we'll talk to an expert about 5G a little bit later on, and we have the first in our brand new series of Blind History starting this morning at 7:45. Very exciting.
Ooh.
Yes. So first things first, how's everybody today? Everybody feeling good, strong,
ready? I want Sia to know that today is not that kind of day. You and those shoulders out like that, it's only 9 degrees.
Explain, Pumi.
Only 9 degrees out there.
What Sia, are you talking about?
Sia, everybody, is wearing the tiniest vest I've ever seen. He looks like he's like a bodybuilder. It's those bodybuilder vests.
Uh-huh. It's like, what do they call them? Like
tight
string vests or something, yeah.
What is this character assassination at 6:09?
Hey, you wore the outfit. Like, Mbolelo's taken some shit over his very loud Friday shirts, okay? Am I right?
Hey,
Mbolelo, is that right?
I mean, we've already dabbed into Sia's sort of confidence and ego issues at home. I didn't want to pile on top, but it's spectacular. Wow. It's an aggressive choice.
It's a very aggressive choice.
I have I have the bare necessities covered. This isn't an HR violation.
You got to get some delts first before you. It's aggressive.
The temperature now is about 11 degrees, and Sia's carrying on like a typical Durban boy, wearing his vest and thinking it's the middle of December. But okay.
It's 9 degrees and overcast here in Joburg.
Yeah, I was also looking, trying to make myself feel better.
Even the app looks foggy. Like if you go on your phone.
Guys, I've got to tell you this. Last night, I did what I hate doing this. But I was talked into going to a homeowners association meeting, the AGM. Okay. Ooh. No. I know what you're going to say. Don't say the obvious thing here because I know. Ooh. Never go to these things, right? But I was asked. No, I know. I had to go. I'll tell you what happened. So there were a couple of other members of the homeowners association, other residents. And they said to me, listen, we need you there, but there's this thing happening, and there's big shit, and we need to get the board to account for themselves, and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so they put the fear of God into me, and I thought, all right, let me see what I can do, see if I can help. Mm-hmm. So I got into the meeting, and I was sitting there, and I was sitting next to someone who I know in the estate, and he ordered a beer for me, and the two of us were sitting there, and we were having a very good time.
You're also allowed to drink at this meeting. Yes.
And people were, there was appropriate social distancing, but mostly it was so boring that you want to die. But we had our beer, and then by the end of my beer, and it was a significant beer, right? Because that's how they serve them there. It's like a proper pint. And I don't normally drink beer, so it was something to do, and it was really boring. You know when they start talking about, well, can you put this kind of awning up, and who pays for the gate maintenance, and the garden levy, and a whole lot of shit. Now, Pumi, I know you're laughing at this because you know what this stuff is. Anyway, I have avoided these meetings for 10 years, because the last time I went to a homeowner's meeting, it was while I was building my house, and I needed a political solution, like Julius would say, because the committee who decides what you can and can't do in these estates, you know, these busybodies, they said to me, no, you can't do this. So I said, fuck you. And I basically got myself elected onto the board. I made myself the head of the aesthetics committee, changed the rules, and then resigned the next day. Okay?
That sounds like the most ridiculous name for anything I've ever heard. That is the most useless name I've ever heard. Aesthetics committee.
Yeah, but
are you shitting me?
It's a thing. So anyway, so I changed the rules, and then I could build my house anywhere I liked, and then I resigned. So I really just went in cynically, completely cynically. I used the system to my advantage, which is what we're taught to do. If you're any good in politics, you do that, right?
It's called Machiavellian.
Right, so I got in, got out. But since then, I have not gone to these things, and I'd forgotten how dreary they were. Don't worry, and it'll be 10 years before I go to the next one. But here's what happened. Okay. So there's this long thing about this and where the money's being spent and the budgets. And anyway, I zone out. And after two hours of listening to this shit, I got up and I walked back to my house. Anyway, I get this message. No, they're voting on a new board, and we need you there to vote. So I was like, you must be joking. This is 9:30 at night, and the meeting started at 6.
Yeah.
So I go outside, and now it's, you know, it's dark, it's getting a bit chilly, so I walk across, and they're all still going. There's still people there. It's still happening. Now they're going to vote for the... So anyway, I decide, look, there's got to be some reason I'm here. So I stand up. And I'm like, all right, before we all do this voting, I just want to tell all of you, I think it's extremely sad that we live in this place and we only meet each other once a year. and it's only, and it's to fight with each other. I said, I want to tell you something. This has been an incredible year. For the first time in my life, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but it's probably because of COVID, I got to appreciate where I live. We live in a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. We're not very neighborly with each other because we don't really have much to do or say.
You don't get yourself elected. That kind of talk.
No, I didn't. So, no, listen, I don't want to be on the board. And I, no. This was never an intention. So don't worry, I'm not on the board. That would have been stupid beyond belief. But I said, I did this little, like, inspiring thing, and people were like, they were so happy, right? They were smiling around the room. And there's a few new people. I nominated a woman called Zanelle to be on the board because I felt like she was very enthusiastic about things, and she's got the right kind of background for it. And she was thrilled, so she wanted to be on the board. I did not. So anyway, we get to the voting, and everybody's all enthusiastic again, and this is the last thing on the agenda. And anyway, we get like 7 new members on the board, which is good. You get some new energy in there, and then my work is done. Boom, for 10 years, I'm out of there. But man, there's always a lot of politics at these things. You know, the local level politics is quite cutthroat, and I forgot about this. I have a little bit of sympathy with the ANC and the DA and the EFF now. I don't want to be involved in that shit. But I did my bit. All right, so now I can feel for 10 years I don't have to do a damn thing. I'm done.
You didn't make any new friends, right?
I did. I met some of the people who live around
me. He was all inspiring. Do you know what happens when you do that? People just gravitate towards you.
Well, especially after they've been...
Bad idea.
No, but put me... There are no consequences for me because I'm not standing for election. So I did a good thing. I made people laugh. I made them feel better about themselves. I called the...
And then you're out of there.
I called the estate management. I said, look, you guys, I know you're doing your very best. It was a short speech. It was like maybe 2.5 minutes. I said to the guys on the existing board, I'm like, I know you tried to do your best during a very tough year for everybody. I said, but you were a little bit like the Gestapo at one point. You know, you were like...
I'm sure that went down well.
You were like government enforcers. And no, they laughed. They thought it was funny. I said, you know, you're not here to do the government's work. You're here to work for the people of this estate and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, everybody thought that was funny.
So I just want to tell you, whilst you were telling your story, what you sounded like to me. You sounded like somebody who had caught their partner cheating, but you talked yourself into getting back with them. And then when you were back with them, you realized why you left, why you had to break up in the first place. Like when you started, you were like, let me explain to you what actually happened. And then afterwards, no. But at the end, I walked away. I did. I respected myself and I walked away. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's more or less what it was.
That's exactly what you
But it was
everything goes down to infidelity for you.
So you guys know.
It's a reality.
You guys know. I'm not very neighborly, and I'm not particularly keen to become best friends with my neighbors. But there are some nice people who live around here. And I told you also that during COVID, I've learned to appreciate the fact that I, you know, live among nice people. And mostly they are. I haven't had any altercations with any of them for years. I stay out of their way, they stay out of mine. But you know what? This is something I think we've all got to do, and I'm not going to get too preachy, but I think, you know, the first place that you start to improve things is close to home. Like, if you're going to, and Pumi always says, Pums, you're the one who started this shit, so don't you now try and abdicate your responsibility. Because Pumi always says, and she used to say this when we first brought her onto the Burning Platform, right at the beginning, she said, don't complain about government at the national level if you're not even prepared to get involved in your own neighborhood. Because
I remember that.
Otherwise, you're just a moaning piece of shit who really shouldn't be opening their mouths and telling everybody else what to do. So
individual responsibility.
Right. So I'm not going to get on any board or anything, but I feel like I've made some contribution. I've also nominated and helped elect a new board. And that's me done for a while.
Did you see that video that's making the rounds on social media of, I don't know, I think it was some kind of imbizo or something in Natal, because obviously it's flared up again, as it does, the tensions between farmers and
farm workers
and workers. And also, you know, we see a lot of it on social media, the farm killings, the violence, there was some kind of imbizo and people were allowed to speak and whatnot. Mm-hmm. There are two particular videos that I've seen quite a lot on my timelines. And the one guy gets up and he says, "We're so tired of you and your committees. We're so tired. Sure. Everybody comes down here, sets up a committee."
He's saying this to they're saying this to Peggy Pele.
Yeah, he says to Peggy Pele, "And you're going to be here for 5 years and then you are gone. And then we're left here with your committee. We've got committees for old people. We've got committees for young people. We've got committees for women."
Aviva.
But you, what I found particularly interesting about that video is he still showed up. He still showed up. Like, he feels that way about the committees, but he still showed up to make his voice heard, to come say, "Yes, you people are useless."
Use your voice.
Use your voice. It's very good. Sana Nelu.
Oh, sure, Jal.
Yeah.
Sana Nelu. Wow.
People are crazy out here. Crazy out here. You come here and you make a committee, but you're afraid to fix anything. Wow.
Yeah, but you see, you've got to go to these things, sadly. I mean, it's a real pain. You know, I know these busybodies in every aspect of society, the Karens, right? The people who, they can't wait to be on a board or on a committee, and they always have to be heard, and they always have to put their hand up. And they're the kind of people who, if you are talking to a friend of yours, they like the school tittletale. They're like, "Shh," while you're busy in a meeting or whatever. Those kind of people irritate the hell out of me.
Yes.
You know what I mean. But, oh, you got to have them, unfortunately. Otherwise, things sometimes just get stuck. And most of us, like, I know Sia.
Also, they do Sia, the you wouldn't go to, don't want to do.
You don't go to your body corporate meetings, do you?
No. No.
You wouldn't go to these things.
No, I've always made a conscious effort, and I'm about to move into a larger complex for the first time in a long time. I've always tried to live in a place with 20 apartments or less for this very reason. But now I'm about to get into the drudgery, so we'll see.
Maybe. Lives out of a duffel bag. He lives out of a duffel bag.
Bureaucracy and busybodies for me. You know, I always, with all due respect, in my personal life, I always try and eliminate the human element. I don't, people feel and they want to cry and tell me how terrible their life is. Nah, I'm not about that. So,
what do you say? You always say, have a cry, have a whinge.
Yeah.
Anyway, so all right. Look, it ended. The whole thing finished at like 10:20.
What?
Night.
No.
Yes. Now, here's another problem.
Yes, sis.
I know. And thank God the curfew is lifted.
What?
Because otherwise, some people who were driving.
You all would have been arrested.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So, all's well that ends well, but this is the kind of investment of time that it's impossible for someone like me to make. I don't have the patience. I mean, Sia, how long have you worked with me? How long can I concentrate for? Maybe 20 minutes? Maybe.
Yes.
Right? Maybe.
Yeah. Good average.
Day.
Yes.
Have a good day.
And that's what I'm saying, like this, to make sure that I hit every point and then you get everything and then we move on.
Sure.
So you've just, you know, as the youth are saying, you've just, I'm shooketh and I'm triggered at what you've just said. Shooketh. Because you're.
Okay.
So now.
William Shakespeare.
Let me tell you something. My mom said something which I laughed at hysterically for about 20 minutes. She said, "I'm not going to black church anymore." This is about 2 years ago and I still laugh about it when I think about it. She said, "I refuse. I will not. I go to white people's churches because I go at 9 and then at 10 I'm finished. I'm too old now for this nonsense." She says, "Black churches, I'm done." So my question to you now becomes, Gareth, how many black people are on this board thing of yours to be taking 6 hours?
But I will tell you, like, at least 3 of the points that came up during the discussion when I decided I'd had enough were brought by black people.
Yeah,
and they
love it.
They're like, but there's security, blah, 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 blah. So, yes. And
the
everyone,
constitutionality.
Well, maybe, but also some people like to be heard.
No, Gareth, no. It's not okay. I'm sorry, it is not okay. And my people, us men, one thing, we are fantastic at many things. Meetings. Yeah.
You are just not having it.
Yeah.
The imbezo.
Yeah.
It's turning into an imbezo.
All right.
Just get the general Bekicele there with a hat for every occasion, and then Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
Is the title even general?
Yeah.
Okay.
General Bekicele. I mean, can you imagine? All right. So we've got some feedback. Do you want to? Do you feel like some feedback this morning? All right.
Let's,
I hear a little bit of maybe from Pumi there, but otherwise not. So we had this from Caleb Mutombwa, who is in, where is he again? Kurdistan. This is amazing. People listen to us all over the world. And remember, we read a part from, we read a part of Caleb's feedback the other day. Pumi said some nice things about you. She has the best opinions and seems to be a good mum. She leaves no passengers when she speaks. She takes everyone along. How do you like that?
That she takes a bow.
Yeah, and then Mbulelo, he said lots of nice things about you, which I'm not going to repeat, except that, you know, he thinks you're very smart. But he neglected to mention Sia. So he specially wrote another email to tell us about Sia. Sia adds... Listen to this. No, it's just about you, Sia. Sia adds the millennial touch. He believes that fairy tales come true and he needs to recheck reality often. Every holiday with a dating couple turns into a proposal in Sia's world. We know that, right? Right, Sia?
So far, I'm wondering, why did Caleb say this?
He says he also has the most empathy among you whole lot. Everyone else seems ruthless. I work for, and remember we asked Caleb, what are you doing in a place like Kurdistan? And he says he works for an NGO that provides education in these areas. If you want to visit, Gareth, do come by. We can host a show from Kurdistan. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say no to that because that's a part of the world I'm very interested in. Bulelo can come, of course. Leanne would be a hit with the men here. Ha, ha, ha. But no need to reignite old flames for her. If you forget someone's birthday, because this is something that I spoke about yesterday, forget someone's birthday, according to Caleb, tough luck, move on. I hope one day to be a broadcaster, since I studied it in Zimbabwe. It has you living in other countries to make a living. I love my country, but I'm ashamed of my government. So that's Caleb, originally from Zim, and now in Kurdistan. How's that? Interesting,
that's
huh?
So cool. What an interesting story he'll have to tell for his life.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Work in a place like that. Sure. That's incredible.
Yeah. Wow.
And then listen to this.
I'm trying to even find it on the map.
It's not a country. It's a part of Iraq.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm just seeing where in general.
Northwestern Iraq, eastern Turkey, northeastern Syria.
So, yeah, the Kurdish area. I will learn something new.
Here's an email from Greg. This came up yesterday when Leanne was talking about her irritating family in Australia that she can't stand. Morning, guys. I can identify with your comments on South African expatriates who are always bad-mouthing the country. They create forums and Facebook groups, which are nothing more than echo chambers. When I moved to the UK, I joined several groups and very quickly extricated myself from them because of the constant negativity. It was just too much. However, the contrast to this is the returned expats who post every negative story from Australia, UK, USA, etc. with comments, not only in South Africa. The truth is, that shit happens everywhere. But that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right on the social media. If it's justifiable on Twitter, these groups feel that they're right. Yeah, and I think Greg makes such a good point. It's all, you know, eye of the beholder stuff. Thanks for a great show, and thank you for your email, Greg. So there's something useful to throw into the pipe when we smoke it this morning. Some very interesting feedback from people who want to hear what Pumi thinks of what's going on currently in local politics. They say that they miss you on the burning platform, Pums, and that they want to hear your thoughts on this. But I know that's the thing you want to least talk about because you're so over it.
So,
you know, this morning when I woke up, I actually realized yesterday when I went to bed, because yesterday was a big news day, right? A whole lot of stuff. I was so exhausted. And this morning when Sia sent me a WhatsApp to check if I'm awake.
Yeah.
He does that for me. So sweet.
Right.
Touching.
I sent him a yawning.
sorry to cut you off. Mbulelo's chirp there, touching, which 0.0 feeling.
Yeah, do you see what I did there? I just carried on. I just left it.
Yes. Yes.
But it's I'm a little tapped out this year. It's been a hectic year.
Yeah,
it's,
I think
everything is happening all at the same time. I'm overstimulated. You know how
many people feel that way
when little babies have too much stuff. It's too much noise, too much feeling, too many people. And then they just cry. I feel like that.
Oh,
I feel like I need.
I'm sorry.
I need a sensory deprivation chamber. I need to be like in the dark salt bath.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
But also stop watching the whole Commission of Inquiry the whole day. Can't have that.
Oh, please don't do that. That's terrible. Mm. Okay, so listen, here's one last email before we get to the headlines. This one's from Stefan Panzer. You remember him, Pumi. We met him.
Yeah.
We met him in Germany. So he's been in Australia for a full year. And he wants to give us some general feedback, especially after Leanne's story yesterday about her family in Oz. A disclaimer, this is my personal experience of living in Brisbane. Traveling to other cities.
Lived experience.
Right, exactly. Having been in Ireland and Germany before this, radio and public broadcasters are just as useless as they are back home. Here, they focus on sensationalism much more, and every death that is not of natural causes makes it on the news. Australians have a high degree of learned helplessness, this is according to Stefan. I think it's due to the wealth bubble that they live in. Ask Mbulelo about the psychology behind it. He probably explains it better. As soon as people hear that I'm South African or I meet other South Africans, there is a high likelihood of them proudly telling me how racist they are. This is usually when I tear them a new arsehole. You get taxed on a similar level to South Africa, but you feel the money is well spent. Low crime, clean, good social initiatives, high quality of life, for less work. It feels like an okay trade-off. This is my main factor on whether I decide to live here and why I haven't come back home. It is a bit of a nanny state, but if you're street smart, not even the Karens can get you. I fought off one who started filming me while I was speeding on my bicycle. Politicians, yeah, it's amazing, yeah. Politicians,
how fast could you possibly be going on a bicycle?
Politicians are extremely incompetent and don't even know how to steal from the state coffers, but that's not a problem, as most inmates, / Australians, are very law-abiding. Which means that they don't expect me to break the law as much as I do and get away with it.
Wow.
Snakes are the only real problem in spring when they come out of hibernation to hunt and they have sexy time in populated areas. See photo, and then he's attached a photo of this big ass snake on top of a fence, which he took.
Oof.
So, yeah, not nice. The biggest difference in South Africa when reflecting on both countries' short histories is probably that we segregated our people and they just committed straight-up genocide. Fun times. But all in all, it's a beautiful country and the vast majority of the people are super friendly. It is safe. Their social platforms just differ a little bit, as they do anywhere in the world. P.S. Gareth, you mentioned a couple of times how much you love geography. I implement location intelligence cloud applications that visualize businesses' customers on a map via artificial intelligence and help them plan their territory and visit rates. So I suppose that would be for hospitality in particular. You could even track where your staff takes long breaks or exceeds the speed limit. Currently, we use our technology for hundreds of things, including Kung Flu tracing in most countries in the world. So that's the COVID. Love the show. Haven't missed one since I was a baby. Kind regards, Stefan. So there's some interesting observations from Stefan about Australia. How's that?
I like that term that he used, learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. That's quite an encapsulating phrase.
Yeah. I commend
because acquired self-helplessness.
Right, that's where it comes from.
Where it comes from.
Yeah. You were going to say Mbulelo?
No, I commend Stefan for, he's really living in Australia. There's no, what's going on back home? Let me throw stones back over the pond. He's smart enough to go, I'm here. Let me make the best of it. That's awesome. Mm. Kudos to you.
Well, we've got some headlines, and then we've got to get to JJ Cornish for the first time this morning. Very exciting. Let me go through these quickly. First of all, the UIF, confident that they now have the right data to carry out legitimate TERS payments. Remember, they put a stop to that because they said that there were a bunch of crooks who were stealing UIF money. So they say that they've collated and gathered all the right data, they're up to date and correct, and they're going to resume payment of COVID-19 temporary employment relief fund scheme payments. The UIF resumed these on Monday after the scheme was suspended in August. So Kimi Makwetu released a report in the tender process and said, these are the irregular people, these are the ones we've got to cut out of the deal, and they've done that now. ENCA reporting this morning, Patricia de Lille is back in hot water. She's hitting back at her detractors. She said she's not concerned about what she believes is a smear campaign by officials in her department of public works, including the director general. Officials have accused her of interfering and usurping their functions. The minister said one of the key performance indicators for public works senior managers is obtaining an unqualified audit for the department for the current financial year. De Lille approached the Labour Court last year to have the appointments of 12 senior managers declared invalid, and more could follow. The minister says she will continue to serve her country. But, I don't know, this is her exact quote. She says, they can't handle me because I'm disturbing the crooks. I'm disturbing them from being corrupt, and that is why they're ganging up now. There is a fight back saying the minister is interfering. I'm making interventions where I see things going wrong. I will continue to intervene when I see things that are wrong. Of course, the people that she is getting in the way of are saying
that are ganging up.
Yeah, but she's saying that, and then they're saying that about her. So who knows who to believe here? I mean, you know,
but I find it particularly interesting. I mean, Patricia de Lille is an incredible politician. I think one day somebody's going to write the paper, the definitive paper about Patricia and her political career. So I've come from the PAC, moved across, started her own party, joined DA. I mean, come on now.
No, she's no slouch, but is she completely clean? I mean, there's been a cloud that's followed her from one place to another. So you know that she's also got
some... Are we having a conversation about a politician?
Yeah, of course. Good point. From ENCA this morning, thousands of people from Botlokwa in Limpopo have taken to the streets over water cuts. Yes. Government have ruined electricity for us in South Africa. Will they also ruin water? Well, apparently the places like these are the canaries in the coal mine because the community said the municipality shut off the water supply to around 25,000 people. Despite a meeting to address concerns over the weekend, taps in the area are still running dry. So let Limpopo be the warning.
If you ask the people of Kwakwa, that has happened a long time ago.
I know.
Kwakwa's been going on about water.
Yes.
Amen.
Kwakwa. In interesting international news, a woman has been arrested on suspicion of sending a package containing ricin poison to President Donald Trump. The unnamed woman was found at a border crossing in Buffalo, New York, as she tried to enter the U.S. from Canada and was reportedly carrying a gun. So she's a nutcase, obviously. The letter containing the deadly poison is believed to have come from Canada. It was discovered last week before it could reach the White House. The Trump administration is yet to comment on the reports, but they've caught this woman, and no doubt they will make all the information available as soon as they can. And then finally, from ENCA, before we turn our attention to the rest of Africa, appeal after 5 Bond guns are stolen in London. Yes, you heard that right. Police have launched a fresh appeal for witnesses after 5 guns used as props in the James Bond films were stolen. One of the deactivated firearms is a yellow-handed llama pistol featured in the 007 movie Die Another Day, which was recovered in a field in the days after the threat. After the theft, rather. The 4 others remain missing, including a Volta PPK used by Roger Moore in A View to a Kill as he pursues Grace Jones up the Eiffel Tower. So some of these were stolen. They found one or two of them, but they're looking for the rest of them. Obviously, it was a big James Bond fan who stole them, right?
Naturally.
Probably fair to say. So we're going to start something new this morning, which I'm extremely happy to introduce to you now. This is, of course, something which I've been talking about doing for a long, long time. And this morning, JJ Cornish joins us. He is a journalist, editor, authoritative commentator on African affairs. And as Pumi says, he doesn't just give you the news. He gives it to you in a funny and interesting way, like very few people these days can do. And it's so great to have you on, JJ, for the first in our African analysis feature, which will be coming to you regularly here on cliffcentral.com. It's very nice to see you, JJ. How are you?
Delighted to be with you. Delighted to be with you all.
Very good. So let's get straight to it, because I know that you are brimming over with stories from all over Africa. So let's talk a little bit about Sudan. Apparently, they've been on the U.S. terrorism list for a long time, and they may be coming off of that. Good news for Sudan.
Very good news for Sudan, and God knows they need it. Since the fall of Omar al-Bashir a year ago, they've had turmoil, but they do now have this mixture of military and civilian in their government. They have the transitional government leading to elections. Now, Omar al-Bashir was a hardliner, and he, for example, sheltered Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. And they've been on that terrorism list since 1993. Now, that means that they don't get access to the United States, so Sudanese officials can't visit there. Their families can't visit. They don't get loans. It's altogether a tough thing. They had a plane come down, I remember, and they said, well, the reason why the plane came down is we weren't able to buy spares for it. That was in the middle 90s. Now, they've moved more and more since the fall of Omar al-Bashir to remove them from the list. And today, the head of the ruling council, who's General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, he's in the United Arab Emirates. Now, the United Arab Emirates, of course, is very much a front runner for Donald Trump at the moment and making peace in the Middle East. And they're talking about removing Sudan from the list. We did have the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, there just last week. He's talking about it, too. They really have to do this as soon as possible, because they're in a parlous state economically. They've moved on Darfur. They're even talking possibly about sending Omar al-Bashir to the International Criminal Court, where he's been indicted for crimes against humanity in Darfur. So Sudan's straining every sinew to get back into favor with the United States. Now, what is it going to mean if the government changes? Will the government of Joe Biden be as understanding? Certainly, Donald Trump likes to say he deals with the bad guys and the tough guys a lot better than he does with the good guys. And that might be why they're pushing so hard. It also might mean that anything he does on Sudan takes away his mismanagement of the COVID crisis. And so it's a good ruse for him at this election time.
So JJ, just quickly, you mentioned Omar al-Bashir, and there was a lot of controversy some time ago when he came here to South Africa and he was meant to be arrested for crimes against humanity. But what eventually happened to him? Because you say, you know, he's fallen from grace, he's fallen from power, but is he still living happily in Sudan, carrying on with his life and not being pursued by the Hague? Or what's going on there?
Well, it's for corruption, but it is one of those sort of country club prisons. You know, it's not a very tough regime, and he's got further charges awaiting him. But they have, as I said, talked very openly about possibly sending him to The Hague to face trial.
Okay. All right. So let's turn our attention to stuff that I think many people have been thinking about during the COVID crisis. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, have been very involved in giving guidelines to countries and helping countries here in Africa to prepare themselves for COVID-19. And one of the interesting things that's happened around this is that there are certain countries that have kind of broken the rules and have done their own thing. Tanzania comes to mind. There was a controversial experiment that was carried out by the Tanzanian president. He said that it would be a good idea to test out the COVID tests that we're all doing on goats and on mangoes and all kinds of other things. And they came up with more or less the same results as they might have with humans. But the WHO has got involved in a different matter, and they've said that they're testing out some African remedies, right?
Yes, indeed. You know, the most controversial of these remedies was that in Madagascar, Andre Rajoelina's. It's in fact using herbs that have fought malaria in the past, and he used that. Now, it's all very well to pull your nose up at it, but a lot of African leaders sent planes to go and fetch bottles and bottles of this remedy. And when the WHO said this was not efficacious at all. Andre Rajoelina, the former disc jockey, who now heads up that island state, said, well, I mean, if it was a white remedy, I'm sure you'd approve of it. But it happens to be an African remedy, so you are being beastly about it. Now the World Health Organization is empowering African medicos and saying, okay, let's test these. Yesterday we did have this country signing up for the vaccine, countries except for China and the United States. Now, so empowering the African doctors and scientists is all very well. This is just as we've had 30 million infections around the world and nearly a million deaths, 957,000 deaths. We have 1.3 million cases in Africa and 53,000 deaths. Do you remember at the beginning when we were told that Africa was going to be the hardest hit?
Yep.
Well, it's the least hardest hit, and we've got to ask why this is. It certainly isn't because of the African remedies, that's for sure. But to play it more fairly, the World Health Organization is now saying, okay, let's test it, but science is going to be the only standard. We have to have the sole basis for any remedy for COVID-19 has to be science. That's bad news again for the American president who wants to, what, goggle with bleach and and take other medicines, right?
Pumi, you wanted to ask something.
I don't want to ask anything, but I'm just very intrigued. It's you know, the way that we look at medication and medicine and healing, and the way that today there is a clear understanding that emotional has as much of a play as the physical in what makes a person sick. That's why we all understand that stress can be such a big killer, right? Mm-hmm. But about 100 or so years ago, the idea of your emotions having a play at how you feel in your body was such an unacceptable point of view, because there was no way that they could measure it scientifically. And now with changes in neuroscience and kind of advancements, we understand it and accept it. And I just find it always so fascinating, the things that we are willing to say, no, we're not going to look at this, because in the basis of science, it has no basis in science. 100 years later, it suddenly does have a basis in science.
And of course,
so it'll be very fascinating to see.
The placebo effect, people have been studying this too. And also, if people believe that that some kind of medicine which is given to them by the people they trust will make them feel better, sometimes that actually does have that effect. But
I mean, at the moment, John, if we look at some of the articles that we've seen in the New York Post, in the BBC even, you know, where some of I read a couple of weeks ago where they said maybe it's poverty that has allowed Africa to escape the coronavirus the way that it has. And all of those things, for me, are always just...
It's searching for answers. They don't have answers, you know. Could it be the way we have fought malaria, the way we have fought Ebola, the poverty, you know? I don't know. You know, I'm reading at the moment, or rereading, Albert Camus' book, The Plague, written about the plague in Oran back in the 1947, or published in 1947. Uh-huh. Absolutely fascinating to see how, when they close the city, the people respond, how people respond to the plague, how the authorities try to deny the fact that there is this plague, how the church moves in and says, this is the wrath of God being visited upon you. It's an absolutely fascinating book. It's one of his best, you know. Albert Camus is just a fascinating read. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. But remember the controversy over testing Africans for the remedies, and the two doctors who said, well, we'd better test Africans because, and certainly African prostitutes, because those are people who are not putting up the defenses that might affect the tests, or might affect the results of tests. And they then had to eat humble pie, and they were castigated by the president. But the fact is, if we do want to test the vaccine, we have to test it on Africans to see that it is efficacious.
So, Jean-Jacques, there are a few political things going on, too, that we need to talk about because they're closer to home than many people would like them to be. And these have to do with the jihadists in Mozambique. We've spoken a little bit about the gas and the rubies, but perhaps you can enlighten us on that front. What's going on in Mozambique?
You know, they're talking about the curse of the gas and the rubies in Mozambique, just as they talk about the curse of oil in Nigeria and Angola, because it leads to corruption. It leads to this enormous wealth that should be accumulated simply doesn't go down to the people. Now, what has happened in Mozambique? They've had something like 6% GDP growth for the last 15 years. But has that got down to the ordinary people? Not a bit of it. And they have the largest gas resources or reserves in Africa, up in Cabo Delgado, right in north. You know, it's this very, very long country, yes. Mozambique. And it hasn't got to the people. So that is why the jihadis, Ansar al-Sunnah, are doing so well. They're saying, we're not benefiting from this, just as we have the separatists in Nigeria doing very well on the basis of that. And they've taken the town of the port of Mocimbo do Paio, and they took that a month ago, and they haven't managed, the government hasn't managed to regain it. The fact is, though, people are saying, good analysts are saying that SADC needs to get more involved, and others are saying even more importantly that South Africa needs to get more involved. Well, I think for South Africa to get involved off its own bat, militarily, in the area called Cabo Delgado would be a huge mistake. It would be the Afghanistan for Russia. It'll be, you know, Vietnam for the United States. We should never get involved unilaterally. We need, if we do get involved militarily, we have to do it as part of a regional force.
And let's be honest that Mozambique's government are hardly the kind of people who you would invite to your dinner party. These are not strong leaders in the first place. And second of all, maybe they deserve to lose control. Of course, the concern here being that a bunch of jihadi militants are hardly the right people to lose anything to, because invariably it goes badly for local people. But what kind of government are we even talking about in Mozambique at the moment? Are they worthy of our friendship and respect?
Well, you know, that's one issue, whether they are happy to talk about it. But the issue is, this is the country on our border. So what happens here is of cardinal interest to us. And if it doesn't work, people will simply come across the Kruger National Park into South Africa, as they have been doing. You know, Gareth, I was the first South African journalist allowed back into Mozambique. 1976, I went there for a meeting, a United Nations meeting. I was a UN correspondent at the time on the solidarity with the people of Zimbabwe, Namibia, and we still called it Azania at that time because the PAC was holding sway at the United Nations. And, you know, that's I interviewed Robert Mugabe at that point and said that he was one of the more impressive leaders I'd ever met, which is something that I've never been able to live down. I remember the fights between the PAC and the ANC delegates. It was very, very interesting. And then once I returned to South Africa in the early 80s or mid 80s, I also went back to Mozambique, went back to that fantastic, huge marketplace in the middle of Maputo, where they had nothing. They had a table with some lemons on it in that three-block marketplace. Nothing, nothing, nothing. The thing about it, though, that one couldn't deny was that the country was governed by these people who were dirt poor. It was the poorest nation on the planet.
Yeah.
But they were uncorrupted. They were not corrupted. Well, sadly, that has changed, and they have become very, very corrupt. And, well, we have now a government there that cannot hold the ring militarily in Cabo Delgado. And I'm not saying for a moment that the jihadis are taking Somalia, you know, where you have Al-Shabaab moving in and out, you know. It's hit-and-run operations. Well, their taking of the port, of course, has been a longer thing and has been more of a headache. But the only answer that they can come up with is that they need military assistance. And when they look around for military assistance, and that happens all over Africa, where do they look to but the chaps in boots down in South Africa? And that is the danger point, that if we feel, well, we've got to secure our neighbor, we're going to send the boots in, we could pay a very, very heavy price for doing that.
Yeah, considering especially how heavy most of the people in our military are, and I mean in terms of weight and not particularly fearsome as a fighting force, but we'll leave that for another day.
Dude, the good news is that we don't have a strong military. It's the only good news we have in South Africa right now, actually, is that we don't have the leadership in the military, and we don't have the manpower.
Well,
they may have boots, but they can't take anything up there. Jean-Jacques, you talk about Zimbabwe and Mugabe being such an impressive leader. I mean, there was a running joke in Zimbabwe for a long time that if they were ever to come across into South Africa, they'd have breakfast in Harare and they'd have lunch in Pretoria, because South Africa was such a walkover.
You're not by any chance Angolan, are you, Pumi?
No.
Oh,
you know, because this sounds like the military equivalent of the battle between Western Province and the Blue Bulls, you know. The Angolans will tell you that they are the primary force in Africa. The South Africans bridle at that. I wouldn't want to live on the difference. But you're right. I mean, so many of our soldiers are HIV positive. We cannot muster enough people to monitor to send our peacekeeping mm-hmm. forces as we would like to. But the fact is, weak as it is, compromised as it is still probably the biggest military or the strongest military on the continent. Not saying much for the military on the continent at all.
Well, you are our heavyweight in terms of analysis on the continent of Africa, and Jean-Jacques just proving that by telling us about his own story of being the first journalist back into Mozambique all those years ago. This is the reason that we are thrilled to have you on. JJ Cornish is a journalist and editor and authoritative commentator on Africa, and this morning he is here to give us an Africa analysis, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. These guys are really, really doing some amazing work, and they work on education throughout Africa. They're actually tremendously interested in Africa from the point of view that many of us are, that this is where the action is for all of us. And the Johannesburg Business School, smart enough to figure out that JJ is one of those people to listen to if you want to understand our immediate environment a little bit better. JJ, it's a pleasure to see you, and we will see you again very shortly with another one of these.
Pleasure's all mine.
Thank you very much. JJ Cornish, you can find out more about this feature and all the others that we'll be doing by going to cliffcentral.com, where you can download anything that you might have missed and pass it on to friends and family and people who you think might be interested in JJ's very excellent analysis. So we talked a little bit about Sudan and Mozambique and the WHO, but of course this is just the tip of the iceberg, and every couple of days we will be checking in with Jean-Jacques to find out more about what's going on in Africa. It's something that unfortunately gets paid very little attention in local media by and large, despite the fact that this is the most obvious place to start looking for news. Many South Africans, we sort of are a little bit like America in that respect, in that South Africans, we look far away for the information, and we look extremely close, and we don't look in that sort of median distance between the proximal and the distant. And that's one of the reasons we want to fix that on this feature. But I think it's going to be fun. Pums, what do you think?
I think it's going to be lots of fun.
Yeah, I couldn't help seeing how excited Bulelo got when we were talking about those cures. I know he believes that if he goes to his sangoma, he'll get better treatment than if he goes to his doctor. Mm-hmm. Right, Bulelo?
Well, no, well, that depends which way the bones fall. So you have to be... I'm a man of science.
All right, well, when we come back in the next couple of minutes, we've got lots for you, including a discussion around 5G, which I know plenty of people want to have. I don't know why, because it seems to have become this boogeyman, this very controversial conspiracy theory type thing with 5G. So we'll find out about that. We'll hear all about what everyone's thinking about this morning. Sia's got some stuff to talk to us about Jeffrey Epstein again.
Of course he does.
Of course he does.
dumb.
Yeah, that's going to be very exciting. And we will take your messages and your calls and your thoughts on 079-748-2090. So let us know what you're up to this morning. If you want to send us an email, just send it to me, gareth@cliffcentral.com too, and we'd love to hear from you. So now you know what to do. Give us
that rhymed.
Did I rhyme? Oh, fantastic.
There's something too, and you know what to do.
Oh, really, Sia? Look at you paying attention to my rhyming skills this morning. See, I told you I should have been a rapper or a rock star.
That vest is, it's an aggressive decision.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I've been trying to think of a word to describe your shoulder line. You've got a soft shoulder line.
Darling, it sticks its hard.
Yeah, all right, listen. We've got to move on, you people. You're messing around.
Do something. Play a song, please.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to do. I was going to, and then Sia and Bulelo decided they wanted to have a whole conversation, so let me start this again.
It's the least aggressive thing I've ever seen, the shoulder line. It's like, all right, I couldn't hear the fly.
Here's the great Tina Turner to take us to 7 o'clock.
Great and Tina Turner, yes.
They do, they go together.
No, she's simply the best.
CliffCentral.com